SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Place in football where the offense is always on the field is on Moneyline with the two best hosts in radio, Donnie Wrightside.
If anybody wasn't watching, listen, I don't know what you were doing.
And Kevin Walsh.
Forget act like you've been there before.
On the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM channel 159.
Oh, what do you say?
Little Money Line right here on Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM channel 159. Kevin Walsh here on this Monday, the Monday after we have received the NCAA tournament's bracket. Madness set to begin really tomorrow, Thursday, whenever you want to say. People say it already started, and they would be right. We had some fun games in the conference tournaments, even if they did not matter at all to the committee. And there was a lot of conversations about the ins and outs of this tournament. I think what, for me, the big takeaway is none of this seems to make much sense. The consistency is not there, but even the formats or the formulas don't seem to add up perfectly. North Carolina causing a big stir due to their 1-12 record in quad one games. North Carolina is the 36th team in the net. Based on that, North Carolina shouldn't have even been on the bubble. People cannot believe they are in the tournament. The number is the number. I'm not here to tell you that that's perfect. I don't know. What I know is Nets dictating quad one, quad two, all that, right? North Carolina, despite the 1-12 record in quad one, the net didn't believe was a bubble team. BPI, I believe, was even higher on North Carolina. Not a bubble team. Gonzaga is eighth in the net. And they are an 8 seed. Well, that sounds like we've made a mistake. You know, I sent the tweet out. It's completely broken. I didn't say it was either the metrics or the seeding. I left that alone. Everybody felt I was referring to the seeding in their replies. I would lean towards the seeding being the issue. Because what we do is we bet. We bet these games. We see these spreads. And the spread that is out there now for Gonzaga's 8-9 matchup, it tells us, okay, yes, a mistake was made here. They're laying 6.5 points, Gonzaga, to 9-seeded Georgia. Okay, we made a mistake here. We've obviously messed something up now when we look at this game. Because if you compare it to the other 8-9 games, Mississippi State is a 1.5-point favorite in their matchup. UConn is a 4.5-point favorite. But, of course, there is, I think, a little bit of a boost for the Huskies' pedigree that is creeping into that line a little bit. Not saying it's unearned. But even that, I mean, you know every number makes a difference. Louisville, a 2.5-point favorite to Creighton. Gonzaga is a 6.5-point favorite in an 8-9. And it's not some slight to Georgia as if they were overseeded. And people think that my complaining, again, is this is so unfair to Gonzaga. No, I actually don't care about Gonzaga. The reality is, if Gonzaga ends up an 8th seed, all of the justifications will be how it's Gonzaga's fault. They didn't win games. They didn't close it out against Kentucky or UCLA or Opportunity 1 or Opportunity 2 against St. Mary's. I don't feel bad for Gonzaga. I feel bad for Georgia. I feel bad for Houston, the number one seed in the Midwest region, one of the undeniable four best teams in college basketball, who for some reason now, in the 8-9 game, is going to play a team that if we just seeded this thing through net, would be a two seed. A two seed. If Creighton knocks off Louisville, Auburn will play a team whose net is lower than North Carolina. You know, the biggest disgrace, everything is rigged, this is outrageous team that's in your tournament. Last team in, Creighton's net is lower than that of North Carolina, as is Oklahoma's, who's going up against UConn. And it's not as if UConn's out there with a net in the teens. It's outside of the top 30, as anyone is who's playing in the 8-9 game, except for Gonzaga. And you're now going to see all those one seeds will advance. Florida, Auburn, Duke, Houston. And you'll see Duke laying double digits, undoubtedly, against Mississippi State or Baylor. No doubt about it. You will see Auburn laying probably double digits, whether it be Louisville or Creighton. Florida, I mean, at this rate, this team might like 20 with the way that they are changing perception. Some very interesting local news we will get to. Wow! We'll get into this next. Huge news out of the MAC. Hold on. Florida, though, can run up against UConn, and that will still be a double-digit spread. Houston, assuming Gonzaga gets through Georgia, will be about a 5-point favorite. Half of all of the other one seeds. That's who I feel bad for. That's who's getting jobbed. That's where the mistakes are being made by the committee. Punishing your one seeds. You can't do that. That's where you're misfiring. And that's where they misfired undeniably yesterday. Far more than letting in a North Carolina team who the predictive metrics, the odds makers, all think actually would belong in this field. That's not the disgrace to me. I feel bad for West Virginia more so than Indiana, because West Virginia didn't turn that Selection Sunday show on and think, I hope we're in. They were in. No one thought they would be out. Over 100 brackets on Bracket Matrix we reference often on this show. All of them had West Virginia in. Every bracketologist. West Virginia's not even on the 11 line. Not last four in. 10 seed. That was tough to watch. Even if their net, by the way, though, is 51st. Also, I don't know how Memphis ended up a 5 seed. That was very surprising. I got to tell you, folks, a lot of radio shows out there, none more equipped to handle the huge news that was just broken by ESPN's Pete Thamel. Iona has fired Tobin Anderson after just 2 seasons. What this says about one of the contenders to cut down the nets. I'll explain that after a quick break here on Moneyline.
Sports-
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you right here on this Monday, live on Moneyline, Kevin Walsh. We have the next hour on Sirius XM, channel 159. Huge breaking news coming out of Iona. Yes, my alma mater, the Iona Gales, have fired Tobin Anderson after two seasons. Iona has even released a statement. It reads from the director of athletics, Matthew Glavaski: "We appreciate Tobin and everything he has done for our program. He has been a valuable member of our Iona community. With the impact of NIL changing college basketball in ways no one could have imagined, Iona feels the need to shift the direction of our men's basketball program. This requires an overhaul of our entire business model and program structure." Iona, they're citing NIL as a reason for this decision. And Pete Thamel has come out, and actually, we already have a expectation as to who will be replacing Tobin Anderson. New Orleans Pelican assistant Dan Girat worked for the Cavs. This is all from Pete Thamel of ESPN, as an assistant prior to New Orleans, and is a former G League head coach as well. The decision here for Iona, as they seemingly have already had the move in place for Dan Girat, likely means they were not pleased with Tobin Anderson. They were kicking the tires around, realized that someone at the NBA level was going to be available to them. And they made the decision that if their season ended in disappointment, then ultimately, right, they were going to make that move. And here is what people need to understand. Iona's season did end in disappointment, because the standard at Iona is not one that was set by Rick Pitino, despite every stupid, lazy graphic you keep seeing on Twitter and on these different shows. Rick's a Hall of Famer. We've known it for a long time. Rick didn't show up to Iona to save the program. It's because he ended up ousted at Louisville for real reasons and needed to go to a mid-major to soften the blow before he could get back to a high-level program. So Iona took him in. And he, again, didn't show up to some low-level program. He showed up to the Kings of the MAC. Every year, Tim Klus makes the tournament. Year in and year out. Iona had won the MAC tournament four straight years. Then COVID. Then Rick Pitino took over. Oh, and by the way, Rick one year didn't make the tournament. So as everybody can't believe what, you know, is going on, and St. John's is great, and they're a great story, and that's great. Iona is once again showing the people who may not know what they should know, the standard at Iona didn't start. People, you're going to see fools who know nothing go, what do they think, Tobin Anderson was going to be able to keep up with what we saw from Rick Pitino? That's not the bar. Rick didn't show up and win a tournament game. That's what would have been another step up. He didn't do that. And the reality is the brand of basketball Iona was getting from Tobin Anderson, flatly unacceptable. 317th in offensive efficiency. 317th in offensive efficiency. Are you nuts? 2012, 15th in the country. That's Timmy Klus. 2013, 18th in the country. That's Timmy Klose. 2014, the 12th best offense in America belonged in New Rochelle to the Iona Gales and were 300 spots lower. That's why Tobin Anderson got fired. That's a program that's got some guts. That's what I like to see. That gets me fired up. That gets me fired up. That's what it should be. Oh, we made a run to the MAC championship. That's where we belong. This is Iona. Anything less is sad. And they showed up to that game as 5.5-point favorites to Mount St. Mary's and could not score the basketball the entire second half. 49 points with a trip to the dance on the line. Woo! Don't let it hit you on the way out. You got somewhere to be, and it's not here. You got somewhere to be, and it's not Iona. I like that. I like it a lot. Reminds people just how this works. Exactly who Iona is. A team that, if they're not playing in the big dance, is disappointed. Tobin Anderson's year number one, they gave him some grace. Said, all right, we'll let you figure this thing out. Year number two, not good enough. Not good enough. And Iona goes and grabs a guy from the NBA because they can. Because that's what Iona basketball is. Walter Clayton, first team All-American, cut his teeth at Iona. You see it on a regular basis. Kid's got something. Got it from New Rochelle. It's true. And everybody act like Rick Pitino saved Iona. And why'd Walter Clayton Jr. decide to play basketball in the swamp instead of Queens? It's about Iona. It's about Iona. Well, that's about enough of that. I don't know. Honestly, I might just play that on loop for the next 40 minutes. No, I won't do that. We'll talk some bracket next right here. It is Moneyline on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Man, oh man, I'm going to have to make some phone calls. I'm seeing some conversations out here around Iona basketball from a lot of people who sound like they're a little upset. Sound like they're a little upset that Iona is not going to settle for second place. Program's in for a rude awakening, I'm seeing. Man, we sure we can't get a caller in here? I might have to send out a bat signal, man, because I don't like what I'm seeing right now. I don't like what I'm seeing, but I'm not gonna drown everyone in Iona basketball right now. I'll take a little bit of a break. We'll pull back. You know, we haven't necessarily talked about the bracket as a whole in terms of picks and, you know, perception and what this is all going to be. And, you know, I think one of the really fascinating things about this year's tournament is if you look at the top, you have four teams, the four number one seeds, a clear cut above the rest of the country. Again, I bring up KenPom often. It is widely used and available, and it is understood. And we've seen in the recent days how within the last 10 or 15 years, I believe, teams with a net rating of 35 or better, there's only been about four of them. And I think it's two national champions, a runner-up, and a Final Four appearance. Side note, the team from that group that was only a Final Four appearance had the highest net of that group. That, of course, would be the platoon squad Kentucky team. And John Calipari was given a lot of grace by Kentucky. This year you have four. That's Duke, it's Florida, it's Houston, it's Auburn. And I think what's fascinating is when you go and fill out the brackets, you know, we know that tournaments are full of upsets. But how many people do you think in your bracket pool will fill out a bracket that has Auburn win the South, Florida win the West, Duke win the East, and Houston win the Midwest? That is a 13-1 proposition. That parlay, you can put that together. +1347 on FanDuel. And I am fascinated. Again, because it's the tournament, so you never operate like this. But could you end up with a situation where the gutsy move is to actually advance the four teams that have been the four best teams in the country? Auburn, the path. Who, as an Auburn backer, are you most fearful of? They did lose to Texas A&M, so that potential rematch looms. On the bottom, Michigan State, there's certainly some trends that suggest they're up against it. As a team who was not ranked preseason, going on deep runs then typically does not materialize. Iowa State lost one of their starters for the remainder of the season in Keyshawn Gilbert. So we know that is going to put them up against it. Ole Miss has a six. We've seen them hang with Auburn. We've not seen them able to take Auburn out. The pathway is certainly there for Auburn. You go to Duke. Baylor and Miss State, I don't feel have the same. Of the 8-9s, that feels the least threatening. Oregon or Arizona, I don't know how many people are running to grab those teams outright. At the bottom, Bama, we know that's legit. That's no doubt. You going against Duke, though? If Bama's there? We'll talk more about this, these top seeds in March, after a break on Moneyline. Kevin Walsh, SiriusXM, channel 159.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live to right here on Sports Grid Radio, SiriusXM, channel 159. Kevin Walsh with you on this Monday for the next half hour. It'll be football full circle. I'm sure that group will get a lot into the Cincinnati Bengals' decision to pay T. Higgins, to pay Ja'Marr Chase. And now, seemingly, they're also going to attempt to pay Trey Hendrickson. And again, the Cincinnati Bengals have kind of found themselves in this situation where no matter what they do, the perception around it will be negative, and I think that that is correct. I think that is 100% how it should be perceived. Ja'Marr Chase, great football player. T. Higgins, great football player. Trey Hendrickson, great football player. But everybody knows that the timing from the Cincinnati Bengals is poor. Everyone knows that. And it cost them millions of dollars on Ja'Marr Chase, millions of dollars on T. Higgins, And if they get the Trey Hendrickson deal done, that'll have cost them millions of dollars as well. Waiting to pay any of those guys could only be justified if you are wanting to see some return on the field, not from their individual statistics, which of course, all of which were fantastic, right? We know what those players brought to the table. Trey Hendrickson, a league best 17 and a half sacks. Ja'Marr Chase wins a triple crown. And T. Higgins, while playing alongside a triple crown winner and missing five games, had 10 touchdowns over 70 receptions and just short of 1,000 yards. All of those guys are great. But they were 9-8. So what went wrong if you're Cincinnati? We talked a lot about the defensive side of the football. It wasn't just that. There were some slow starts in there. You think about what they did against New England. Obviously, that was a big problem. There were some games, you know, you think about the game against the LA Chargers, where they trailed 24-6 at halftime. Now, ultimately, they did come back in that game to tie it, but it expends a lot of energy. And yes, they did give up 34 points when, you know, it was all said and done. There were close losses in there, Kansas City by one, Baltimore by three, Baltimore by one. You flip those around, you're 12-5 and viewed as a very, very real Super Bowl threat. You probably win your division if you take both of those games off Baltimore. I think that was a run of three games for Cincinnati where being 3-0 was far more likely than being 0-3. Yet they were 0-3, as opposed to 1-2 or 2-1, which would have made the difference and at least been able to get them a slot in the postseason. So maybe Cincinnati feels, we played close games. The coin didn't flip our way. You play a lot of close basketball games, right? People think eventually that shoe drops. You'll see a lot of people picking against Michigan under those guidelines, along with some other stuff. Same thing is true in football. And for Cincinnati, the idea is that this will circle back, right? The Kansas City Chiefs, of course, right? Every game's a close game. Every game's a close game dumped on their heads by the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. Thank you. Cincinnati did move on, though, from Lou Anarumo, their defensive coordinator, who people had been singing the praise of for years. So, was Lou at fault? Was he unable to adjust due to the personnel departures? Not many people seemingly felt like, okay, that was an absolute fair assessment. He is the one who should pay the price. But Cincinnati, again, looks like they are going to, well, not looks like, they are going to run it back. The issue for that, for this team, they also missed the playoffs last year. People go, oh, well, Joe Burrow was injured. Okay, well, Joe Burrow was injured in week 11 against Baltimore, a game they entered, okay? A game that Cincinnati entered 5-4. At the time Burrow left the field, he threw a touchdown pass, and he did throw that pass, right? They were winning. It was early in the game. It was the very, you know, it was the middle of the second quarter. Maybe with Burrow, they make the playoffs. Maybe. It's not a guarantee, obviously. Now, the two seasons prior to that were incredibly successful. Made a Super Bowl run, made a conference championship run. The team looked a lot different back then, though. The team looked a lot different back then. And for Cincinnati, it now feels as if the team is going to look very similar not a lot of room for improvement on some areas because you've had to pay a lot of money to retain Chase, T, Trey. You don't expect a level of cap savviness for Cincinnati that signing these guys will open up the checkbooks for this year to then attack in other areas. We're not seeing that from Cincinnati this offseason. We're not seeing big, you know, offensive linemen end up Cincinnati Bengals. We've seen them bring in Oren Burks, who was the third string linebacker, had to step in for Nakobe Dean on the Philadelphia Eagles. Played really well, could be very good for this team, but you know, we've not seen huge moves at the cornerback position, safety position, defensive line. We're not seeing that. So it looks like what Cincinnati's really done is allow these deals to multiply, to grow in value, and then reach a point where it's like, okay, the only way to really make everyone happy is to bring these guys back. And it's interesting, but to some degree, it's as if ownership now, the winning's not on them. It's on the players. Zach Taylor, I guess. But this is what Joe Burrow was campaigning for. This is clearly what T. Higgins wanted. Chase just wanted to be the highest paid guy. And he is. You know, Trey Hendrickson, I guess, wants to be there as well. If the belief is there from the fans and from these players that if you keep us together, the winning is going to come, the delay that we saw from ownership in paying T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, Trey Hendrickson, I don't want to say is justified, but it becomes secondary. Because the onus is now on Joe Burrow and this team to win at a real level. They will enter, I think, barring any big surprises, with the fourth best odds to win the AFC. That is not insignificant. Their Super Bowl price right now is seventh best, tied with Washington. They are not a tier one team, but clearly right at the top of tier number two. It looks like tier number one, you talk Super Bowls, Philly, Baltimore, Kansas City, Buffalo, and Detroit. And then Cincinnati is right around that corner, and the onus is now on their guys because now they have their money. We'll circle back to March Madness and the bracket after a quick break on Moneyline, Sirius XM Channel 159.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, so we're back with you here on Sports Grid. Talk a little bit about the number one seeds and is the risky move, is the gutsy move to actually take all of the number ones to make it. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of you have already filled your bracket out. I'm not there yet. I'm gonna take my time with this, you know. That's how I am. The work has started, okay? Work has begun, but, you know, and I've gone through the South. And I, you know, for Auburn, the path is there. I know UC San Diego is, you know, this trend is the trendy 5-12, but it's for a good reason. I like them in that spot more than I would have expected the more I got into it. And I think what's interesting is, like I'll tell people now, I like Texas A&M against Yale. I'm talking Lion 7.5. I think UC San Diego could even clip A&M. I do. I don't think they could beat Auburn, UC San Diego. A&M can. And those are the swing things in brackets, right? And those are the spots where you want to, you might want to be cautious. Right, listen, man, I'm telling you, Texas A&M can beat Auburn. But I'm not sure they can even get past UC San Diego as a 12, much less the 5. Michigan, if Michigan gets there, like, you may then be better off just advancing Auburn. So you don't need Auburn to win your the whole thing. Now, if you think if you like Texas A&M to win the whole thing, then none of it matters. Because obviously you like them to beat UC San Diego. But when you get to those trip spots, you have to really consider it. Duke's path in the East, a lot of people have felt, okay, that's a really secure window, right? The reality on Houston in the Midwest is Gonzaga, I think actually has, and I'll pull this up, you know, quickly, they have the third best odds. Again, this is why the seeding is bad. To win the Midwest, despite knowing they would have to play Houston in the round of 32, because Gonzaga will be booked as the best team probably. So I know Tennessee's ahead of them in KenPom, things of that nature. If Gonzaga beats Houston and then were to play Tennessee in the Elite Eight, I think Gonzaga would end up favorites in the game. It'd be close. I think Gonzaga would. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think I am still all in on Houston. I'm all in on that program. That isn't going to change what they're bringing to the table this year. Their draw is not the easiest of the bunch, though. And I think that's going to lead to a lot of people looking to potentially pick on them. You know, Purdue going up against High Point, Clemson going up against McNeese, you will see those 13 and 12 seeds picked quite a bit. The bottom of this bracket is fascinating. Illinois looks to be the 6th seed people want to pick on with the winner of Texas, Xavier. Tennessee is a team people don't mind picking on. Kentucky, we'll see. You know, that's where there's a level of nerves, I think, that go into that game, because if you told people before the season that Mark Pope won a tournament game, people would have been very, very pleased. Mark Pope, though, ends up a 3 seed. The expectations change. I don't think it's a situation where he has to make the Sweet 16 anything less as a failure. I don't think it's a rousing success if he were to be eliminated in the round of 32. But it is now unquestionably a failure if Kentucky loses to Troy. That's the reality of it. That's the reality of it. We're talking 1 seeds, though. Is Houston the one that you want to pick on? What about Florida? How popular will UConn be in that game? Here's the issue. For those who were ready and willing to pick UConn, Florida somewhat is giving UConn vibes. Number keeps moving. They just keep winning. They just keep rolling. People are loving the Gators in the market. Florida's climbed all the way up to the second best odds to win the national championship. Sitting right now at plus 390, under 4-1. Legitimate dip on the Gators, despite their 8-9 game being the back-to-back champs. Maybe it's because Memphis is the 5, not as scary as, say, a Clemson, right? Is Maryland at the 4 scary enough for people? Tough to say. I think the bottom of the bracket presents real challenges. If St. John's is there, although they have those Michigan State precedents of being a non-preseason ranked 2 seed, we've seen those teams not go far. But if the Johnnies are there, I mean, listen, all they do is win, right? If Kansas is there, you're talking Bill Self and the preseason number 1 team. If Texas Tech is there, we know how good that team is. Are they healthy at that point? For me, so Florida might have what looks like the least dangerous top end. If they are in the Elite Eight, their opponent feels as if they will be incredibly dangerous, where maybe in other brackets, that's not the case. Like, as somebody who is a Kentucky basketball fan, they can't beat Houston. And that's the three seed, right? Within this region. Illinois,
well, that's not happening. Stop it. Stop it, please.
Right? From the bottom portion of it all. I don't think Sparty has enough to get through Auburn. I don't. I don't know if Marquette has enough to get through New Mexico. Bama-Duke would be an awesome game. Bama-Duke would be an awesome game. But Wisconsin? BYU? Feels less threatening. And it makes for a great bracket. It makes for a great, great tournament. And that's exactly what this is going to be. We're going to get more into this, of course, tonight on Game Time Decisions. Go through some of the early lines. I'll continue to be breaking this down throughout the day. Let's take a quick look over at your NBA slate here on this Monday. Kevin Walsh, it is Moneyline on SiriusXM, channel 159.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Great to have you here on this Monday. DRS will be back tomorrow. I'll be with Donnie as well. So, DRS called in the studio for the early line today. So, honestly, and I love working with Donnie, great day for him to not be here, because like we were able to do a whole segment on Iona, as we should, though, as we should. Marist fans telling me the glory days are done for a team that was just in the MAC tournament. I don't know. I don't want to be rude because it's a friend, but it's insane behavior and conversations. So I want to talk about tonight's NBA slate. There's a really important game that may end up not mattering. Late night, Golden State is a 4.5-point favorite against the Denver Nuggets. And we have a couple of game time decisions for Denver. Christian Braun is probable. Aaron Gordon, Jamal Murray, and Nikola Jokic are all questionable. On top of that, Steph Curry is questionable. Denver, possibly, feeling as if their standings dance is largely with the Lakers, may think to themselves, let's take a beat on this Golden State game. We're going to be up against it. They're red hot. And let's get extra rest as they'll play the Lakers on the road Wednesday. Denver, of course, lost to the Luka LeBron Lakers a couple of weeks ago. This weekend, they were nearly beaten by Austin Reeves and Dalton Connect and Christian Coloco. So clearly there's, you know, some oomph to that game. But if Denver does punt this game, that would be a real shame. Because I really am waiting for Golden State to play some upper echelon teams that are healthy. I am not trying to undercut all of the winning that has happened since Jimmy Butler has arrived. The winning is substantial. But the caliber of opponent is not there. Their toughest games at Milwaukee, Giannis didn't play. At the Knicks, Karl-Anthony Towns didn't play. Home against the Knicks, Jalen Brunson didn't play. Your fourth toughest game would have to be, I would think, home against Detroit as a 5.5-point favorite, won the game by 5, needed a fourth quarter comeback. They won. They did. I'm not acting like they didn't. Don't tell me the Houston game, who sat some key players in that one. started Aaron Holiday in that basketball game. And if you want, you can, I guess. That was a while ago. This game against Denver was supposed to be an awesome step-up level test. Booked his favorites. Now it may not be. And there's not that many of these on the Golden State schedule. There's a back-to-back with Milwaukee. They have to go to Memphis at the Lakers, home against Denver again. There's not a lot of them. There is just not a lot. I'll say the other game tonight, then, from a standings perspective, you have to acknowledge is the Lakers game against the Spurs. Lakers still without LeBron. The expectation is at least another week. We heard from Shams Charania. So that means you're not going to see LeBron until the next road trip at Orlando, at Indiana. I think anything sooner, the earliest you would think would be the home game against Chicago. That's the earliest. So if you're the Lakers, that means your next three games are home against the Spurs, home against Denver, second leg of a back-to-back, home against Milwaukee. You cannot lose this game to the San Antonio Spurs. Booked as an 8.5-point favorite, you cannot lose this game. Should be a fun NBA slate. We'll break that down on Game Time Decision. 6 p.m. Eastern start, so make sure you're live there on Sports Grid, on Sports Grid Radio. It is football full circle. Next, Kevin Walsh. Keep it right here on Sirius XM, Channel 159. I'll see you tomorrow with Donnie.